records the dash that's causing.
Yeah. All right, so we'll say good morning. Let's pick up. So today's daf is Lamed Vav, and we are picking up on Lamed Vav. It's nice when that happens every once in a while.
Once in a while.
It's a literally top of the daf. Hustle. So we'll say, remember again, we ended off yesterday with the Kasha. The Gemara wanted to know how much fruit are you permitted to clear off the roof? Because remember again, the Mishnah just makes a general statement of Mashilin Peros Derech Aruba, general statement that you could go ahead and lower Peros through the skylight on the roof. We saw a discussion in Masechet Shabbos that says you can move four or five boxes of straw in the wheat. So the Shaila was, does that four or five limit apply to Yom Tov? Does it not apply to Yom Tov? So the Gemara didn't answer. So the Gemara leaves that question open-ended. The Gemara now goes on to a second question. Tanar Hasam, we learned there, Avalo es ha'otzar, but you may not go ahead and clear out the storehouse. What does that mean? Bamar Shmua, my Avalo es ha'otzar. What does it mean, but not the storehouse? Avalo yigmar es ha'art otzar kulo. Shmuel says what it means is that by Shabbos Rabosa, you may not go ahead and clear out the entire storehouse from boxes of wheat and straw. Look at Rashi. So this is very interesting. Shmuel says now there is a cap. When we said before that you can clear out four or five boxes of straw or of wheat, so that's assuming that what? That there'll still be more boxes left in the storehouse. But you are never permitted to fully clear out the storehouse. Why? Because there's a concern that if you fully clear out the storehouse and expose the floor of the storehouse, you will find that what? The floor is not even, and you may come to go ahead and be mashugumos, fill in the depressions in the ground, which is an issue of what? Which becomes an issue now of bona. So the Gemara says, lo yigmar es ha'otzar kulo, dilma asa, aval lo yigmar es ha'otzar kulo, dilma asa la'ashve gumos. Because you may come to flatten out the surface of the ground of the storehouse, which is an issue again of bona. Hachamai, but what is the halacha concerning the fruit on Yom Tov? Are you permitted to go ahead and clear all the fruit off the roof or not? To which the Gemara says, Hasam hu b'Shabbos the aser mishum de chamir. Maybe by Shabbos, the reason why it's aser is because Shabbos is stricter. Aval Yom Tov the kill shapir dami, but Yom Tov, which in generally is treated a little bit more leniently, you should be able to clear off all the fruit. Odil mahasam the ika bitl beis hamedrash amrit lo. Or maybe you could say the following. The case of Shabbos Shabbosai, where you're clearing away the boxes of the straw and wheat, was what case? Where you needed this space, let's say, because the boxes are in the base medrash. And if there's not room for the base medrash, people won't learn. So I'm allowed to clear away the boxes of produce. Bless you. I'm allowed to clear the boxes of produce in order to go ahead and allow for learning in the base medrash. So now the Gemara is saying, bless you. Or perhaps, again, if in the case of bitl beis hamedrash, I'm not allowed to do it, then hacha deleka bitl beis hamedrash kol kol shekin. Then certainly again in the case of the fruit by Yom Tov, where there is no issue of bitl beis hamedrash, then certainly I should not be able to do it. Okay, so we'll say the Gemara leaves that question open also. V'hacha tinan, here we learn mashilin peros derech aruba bi Yom Tov. So our Mishnah said you may lower fruit through the skylight on Yom Tov. Amrav Nachman lo shano ela ba'osa hagag. When do we say that you could lower fruit? That's what I will say, only if you're lowering it through the skylight on the same roof on which the fruit is currently situated on. So, but however, aval migag legag lo, but I can't transfer fruit from one rooftop to the other rooftop. And I will say the logic behind that is that would already become tircha yisera. That would already become incredible amounts of exertion, and that we don't want happening on Yom Tov. We have a brisa that supports this. You may not carry fruit from one roof to another roof. Even when what? Even when the rooftops themselves are ultimately even. What about by Shabbos? So I will say these are all halachas by Yom Tov. So by Yom Tov, I can lower the fruit through the skylight on the roof, but it's got to be on that roof. It has to be on that roof on which the fruit is situated. You can't transfer from one roof to another, even if the roofs are level with each other. What about by Shabbos? To which the Gemara says, "Hacha hu de aser mishum Yom Tov, dikiel va'asil zalzulei bei." Or maybe the rabbis were machmir by Yom Tov. Why? Because since Yom Tov has inherent leniencies, maybe the concern is we don't want to be overly lenient, lest people come to just disparage the sanctity of Yom Tov. Aval Shabbos dechamiri v'lo asil zalzulei bei shapir dami. But by Shabbos, which is more chamer, therefore people respect it, we can give you a kula of moving the produce from one roof to the other, and people will not come to go ahead and erode the sanctity of Shabbos. O Dilma, or maybe we could say, Mahachadika hefseperos amrit lo, or maybe I say the following, if in the case of Yom Tov Rabosai, where if we don't let you move the fruits from roof to roof, there could be hefseperos, there could literally be a financial loss, and yet you still can't do it. Hasam daleka hefseperos lo kol shekin. And certainly in the case of Shabbos, where there is no financial loss, certainly it should be prohibited. Again, the Gemara leaves that question open. Tanan, not next question. Lo yishal shalem bechevel bechalonos. Lo yoridem derech sulamos. So we'll say the Mishnah says that you may not go ahead and lower the fruit with a rope through windows. Well, so when I mentioned the case of windows yesterday. If you could imagine, if you have a rooftop, but the rooftop has walls of, let's say, the home that rise above it, and those windows open into the structure, you may not go ahead and lower the fruit through the windows. Can't lower them through the windows, let's say in the bucket, because again, remember, the only license to lower fruit into the house is when gravity does the majority of the work. So if all I need to do is push it towards the skylight and it falls through, that's fine. Anything else that's going to require additional exertion, that cannot be done. Below you're reading derech sulamos. Furthermore, again, you can't take it down via ladders. Hasam mai. But what is the halacha by Shabbos? Hacha biyom tovu do'asur deleka bitla beis hamedrash. Maybe I'll say by Yom Tov, it's Asr. Why? Because again, there's no Bittul Beis HaMedrash. If I don't take the fruit down, the most that's going to happen is what? Is there's a financial loss, but it's not going to prevent, again, Talmud Torah from happening in the Beis HaMedrash. About Shabbos, the Ika Bittul Beis HaMedrash, Shapir Dami. But by the case of Shabbos, where there is Bittul Beis HaMedrash, then perhaps, again, maybe I should even be able to lower it with a rope through the windows or on a ladder. Oh, Dilma, the other possibility is, Hecha, the Ika Hefsid Peros, Amrit lo, or the other possibility is if in the case of Yom Tov, where there literally is a financial loss, yet the Gemara still said, the Mishnah said, I can't do it. Hasam dalaka hefseperos lakol shekin. Then all the more so, again, in the case of Shabbos, where there is no financial loss, I certainly shouldn't be able to do it, to which the Gemara says, Rabosai, to all of these questions, teku. So the Gemara leaves these questions open, and Rishat Tova umatlachas Eliyahu HaNavi will resolve them for us. Umechasin esaperos. So what did the Mishnah say? You're permitted to go ahead and cover the fruits. So remember this case where I'll say, if let's say I have water dripping onto my rooftop, okay? Or for that matter, it's raining. It doesn't matter. The point is there's water. And let's, for whatever the reason, I'm not going to lower it through my skylight. I am permitted to take a kli, a utensil, or a garment and place it over the fruit in order to save them from being ruined. Amar Ula, Ula said, Afilu avira delivni. It's not just fruit, even if you have rows of bricks. But I will say, let's say again, I have rows of bricks on my rooftop. Look at Rashi. Va'afilo avira delivni. So, levanim, levenim, hasidurim umuktsim lebinyan. I will say, avira means a row, livni are bricks. So, we'll say, listen to this case over here. Let's say I have rows of bricks on my rooftop. Now, why are they there? They're because I'm going to build. Now, what happens? Ugishamim notfim. And when the rain comes, the rain wets the bricks. And I will say, what's the issue? The issue is twofold. We'll see two ideas, actually. One is that actually enough rain, because the bricks are made from clay, it can actually cause the bricks to dissolve, to disintegrate. Furthermore, the other issue also is that lemaisa, when there's too much moisture in the bricks themselves, Rashi says later on, it prevents the cement from properly adhering to them. Either way, it's going to compromise its ability to be used for building. So what's the halacha? Mutrash is mutul taltal kelim mitzarchan ulechas soson velo aminon hoyal vein atzmon initlin afakli lo yinatul tzarchan. So we'll say the chiddush over here is that Ula says that you can even go ahead and move a kli, or move an object to go ahead and cover the bricks. Now, the chiddush in that is that even though the bricks themselves may not be moved, because the bricks themselves are mukta, lemaisa, I am permitted to go ahead and move a kli and move a utensil for the sake of going ahead and covering the bricks. On the other hand, Rabbi Yitzchak says, Peiros haru'uyim. Rabbi Yitzchak says, no, not true. Not true. The only thing that you're allowed to cover on Yom Tov is something like fruit. What does it mean, something like fruit? Something that is usable on Yom Tov itself. Look at Rashi. Rabbi Yitzchak Amar, Dafka peros haruyin tiltol. You can only go ahead and move a utensil for something like peros, something like fruit, that is ruyin, that is fit to go ahead and be carried or be moved, to be used on Yom Tov. Who destroyed Rabban on the Taltal Kiyam Latzarchan. Ava midi delav bar tiltol ain kli nita latzarchan. So we'll say, what we're seeing over here is that there is a much more fundamental machlokas between Ula and Rabbi Yitzchak. So this is as the Gemara is going to say right now. But as Rabbi Yitzchak latamei, dam Rabbi Yitzchak, ain kli nita elo ledavar hanita b'shabbos. So we'll say, Rabbi Yitzchak's opinion is that you may not, if you need to use a utensil to serve something else, you may only move a utensil for the sake of something that itself is permitted for use on Yom Tov. And this is Yom Tov and Shabbos, by the way, same thing. So therefore, again, Rabbi Yitzchak will say like this, you may not move a utensil to cover bricks on Yom Tov. Why? Because bricks themselves are muktzah. But you can move a utensil to go ahead and cover fruit, because fruit or something like that that are permitted on Yom Tov, you can move the kli. Ula disagrees with that, and Ula says, as long as the kli itself that you're moving is inherently permitted to be moved, it's not muktzah, it doesn't really make a difference what you're moving it for. Whether you're moving it to cover fruit, which is usable on Yom Tov, or you're moving it to cover bricks, which are not usable on Yom Tov, as long as the kli itself is not muktzah, it's permitted to be moved. So the Gemara goes weiter. The Gemara says, Tanan. So the Gemara now is going to try to figure out whose opinion is right in this discussion. Tanan. Mechasen esa peros bekelim. So remember, we learned, the Mishnah said that you may go ahead and cover peros with utensils. Peros in avir delibnilo. So also the Gemara is bringing now a diuk from our Mishnah. That what's the case of our Mishnah? The Mishnah said that you may go ahead and what? And cover fruit, which indicates to us what? Dafka fruit that you can go ahead and do, but let's say bricks. You would not be permitted to do this, would seem to support the position of Rabbi Yitzchak, to which the Gemara says, no. Lo, who adin dafid avir delivni? The reality is it's not true. According to the Mishnah, you could even move a utensil for the sake of covering bricks. Va'aydi detana reisha mashilin peros. Tana seifa nami mechasen esa peros. And the only reason why the Mishnah talks about peros over here is to create a sense of textual symmetry. That just as the beginning of the Mishnah said, that you may go ahead and lower peros through the skylight, so too the second case also spoke about peros. But the Mishnah is not coming to limit this ability to move a kli only to peros. The Mishnah might in fact hold that what? That you can move a kli even to cover the bricks. Tanan. So we learned. V'chein kade yayin kadesh, v'chein kade shemen. So remember, the Mishnah said that you may move a utensil to cover up barrels of wine or barrels of oil. So also, again, this would also seem to be a proof to the position of Rabbi Yitzchak, because barrels of wine, barrels of oil, something that's usable on Yom Tov, it's usable on Yom Tov. Therefore, it sounds like what the Mishnah is saying is you may only move a kli to cover something that itself is permitted on Yom Tov. The Gemara says, no, hachamai askina, what are we dealing with over here? Betivla. Oh, that the wine and the oil in the barrels is what? It's tevel. So because it's tevel, it's not usable on Yom Tov. It's essentially muktzah. You can't, because you remember, you can't tithe on Shabbos and Yom Tov. So the tevel effectively is muktzah. And yet what? We still see that you can move the kli in order to cover it. Hachanayim istar, but this seems to be clear. The isak, because if you want to say that it's talking about permitted wine and permitted oil, tana l'reisha peros. So kadayayin kadeshemen, it's true. I'm sorry. Tana l'reisha peros. So we'll say, if that's the case, it's about permitted wine and permitted oil, why do I need the Mishnah to state that case? It already spoke about fruit in the first case. So if it's permitted wine, permitted oil, why would permitted wine, permitted oil be any different than peros? Rather, you have to say that it's talking about wine and oil that's tevel. And the chiddush is what? The chiddush is what? That l'maisam, even permitted to go ahead and move a utensil for something that itself is not permitted, which the Gemara says not necessarily. No. Even if we're talking about permitted wine and permitted oil, those cases are still necessary. Why? Because I might have thought that Chazal were only concerned for a hefsid meruba. That when did Chazal allow you to go ahead and move a utensil to cover something else? That's only when there is a significant loss, like peros. However, again, if there's a more minimal loss, like barrels of wine, I will say what that means is a minimal loss is the dripping of the water is not going to ruin the entire barrel. It might ruin, you know, over time, it might ruin a little bit of the wine in there. But lamaise, again, it's not as significant as the loss that can be incurred as a result of the fruit that is spread out over the core, over the entire roof. So I might have thought that the dispensation to go ahead and move the item or cover the item is only for a significant loss, but for a relatively insignificant loss, you can't. Kamash malon, no. Tanan. No, so just trying again, all in the machlokis of Ula and Rabbi Yitzchok. Just trying to figure out again, can you move a kli on Shabbos or on Yom Tov for the sake of something that itself is not permitted or is mukta?
To
Rabbi Yitzchok. Correct. So the Gemara goes right to the Gemara says, Tanan, no sin kli tachas hadelef b'Shabbos, to which the Gemara says, okay, we have another proof. What does the Mishnah say? You may go ahead, if you have a leak in your house, you may go ahead and put a bucket underneath the water to catch the water. And I will say, now the Gemara assumes when it says this, is that Lemaisa, the water, that drip water, that drain water, that we call that dripping water, is not raw, it's not fit for anything. So because it's not fit for anything, by definition, it's Mukta. And yet what do we see? That you're permitted to go ahead and move a kli for the sake of something that's Mukta, which would seem to be a support for Rabbi Yitzchak. To which the Gemara says, no, bidlaf haroi, no, not necessarily. That water that's dripping down could be fit, not necessarily for human consumption, but it could certainly be fit for animal consumption. Therefore, again, it's not a riot, Rabbi Yitzchak. Tashma, we have another braisa. Parsin machatzeles agabi levenin b'Shabbos. You are permitted to go ahead and spread a mat over bricks on Shabbos. So again, this is the same case as similar case that we saw before. It's raining. I'm nervous that the constant rain is going to go ahead and diminish the quality of the bricks. So it's a significant financial loss. So the Mishnah says, the Bryce says, it's permitted to go and spread a mat over the bricks. Then I will say, again, this would also seem to be a raya. This would seem to be a raya to Ula. Because I will say, what do you see over here? That you're going ahead and what? You're going ahead and you are spreading a mat over something that itself is not what? That itself is not usable for Shabbos. Shabbos or Yom Tov, right? Or actually this case over here is Shabbos. So this would seem to be a proof to Ula's position that you are permitted to go ahead and move a kli even for something that itself is not permitted on Shabbos and Yom Tov. To which the Gemara says, no, what kind of bricks we're talking about over here? The Iyasar Mibinyona, these are bricks that are left over from building, meaning I already built what I was going to build. The bricks are now left over. The Chazi Lemizga Alayu. And when you have leftover bricks, so what did people normally do with leftover bricks? They used it for sitting purposes. So essentially this is talking about a brick that has a permitted purpose on Shabbos, and that's to sit on. Okay. So again, no raya. Tashma. Parsin machatzelas al gabi avanim b'Shabbos. You're permitted to go ahead and spread a mat over stones on Shabbos. Now, most likely, the assumption is stones are what? Stones are mukta. And yet, what do you see over here? That lemaisa, so you're permitted to spread the mat over the stones. I'm moving a kli for the sake of something that itself is mukta on Shabbos, which would seem to be a raya to ula. To which the Gemara says, no, what are we talking about over here? Ba'avadim mikur zolos. The chazion lebeis akise. What are we talking about? Sharpened stones that were used in the bathroom. So we've seen this already before. That at times of the Gemara, they used to use stones to wipe themselves. So you had to use a certain type of sharpened stone to be able to do that. So therefore, the stones that we're referring to over here are these bathroom stones. So don't try this at home. Right? So because of these sharpened stones, again, they're not mukta. And therefore, the mice, again, you are permitted to go. Therefore, again, the act of covering them is not a raya to Ula, because even Rabbi Yitzchak would agree that such stones are permitted for usage. Tashma, parsin machatzelas agabe kuras devorim. Most of you are permitted to go ahead and spread a mat over a beehive. And I will say, the assumption is that the beehive is muktzawai, because it's something that is dedicated for the use of the bees. Therefore, by definition, again, it's going to be muktza. But yet, what do we see over here? That lemaisi, you can go ahead and you cover it. So you see over here that you're moving a kli, moving a utensil for the sake of covering something that itself is mukta, which is seen to be a raya to ula. So the Gemara says, machazaz gabe kavar kuras dvorim b'shabbos b'chama b'neachama. You could do it during the summer in order to protect it from the sun. U'begishamim b'neagisham, during the rainy season because of the rain. U'bilvad shelo yiskavin lotzot. As long as what? As long as you are careful not to have kavana to trap the bees. because in essence, when you spread the mat over the hive, you have to be careful not to have kavana to go ahead and trap the beast. So the Gemara says again, so we'll say this seems to be a clear raya to ula, that here the beehive is mukta, and yet again you are permitted to go ahead and move the utensil in order to cover the beehive. To which the Gemara says, hasam nami di'ikidvash. No, what's the case? The case is where there's honey in the hive. If there's honey in the hive, therefore that makes the hive usable for adam, for a person as well. Therefore, it's not mukta. Amali Rav Ukva mimeshon Rav Ashi. So Rav Ukva from Meshon is the place. That's Rav Ashi. Hatenich bimosacham di'ikidvash. So I understand that that's true, because in the but that's true in the summer, because in the summer there's honey. What about in the winter time, where again the rainy season, where there's no honey in the hive? Lo nitzrucha elav osan shtei chalos. So the Gemara says, oh, I'll tell you why. It's necessary for the two combs. Apparently, the way the bee farmers used to during the rainy season, where I guess bees don't produce as much honey, would put two honeycombs into that hive, that the bees could sustain themselves from those combs. So essentially, the Gemara's answering is, there's honey in the hive even during the winter. Because there's honey in the hive even during the winter, therefore, again, it's not mukta for me even during the rainy season. So the Gemara says, Osan shtei chalos, muktos hein. But again, those two chalos, those two honeycombs are muktos, Rashi says, lidvorim. But those two honeycombs are put in there not for people, not for man to use, but rather what? For the bees to sustain themselves. To which the Gemara says, Hacham ask, you know what's the case? Shechashav aleihem. The case I will say is what? We're on Erev Shabbos or Erev Yom Tov. You had in mind that you were going to take honey from those combs. If you had in mind that you're going to go ahead and take honey from those combs, then by definition, you designated it for human usage as well. And therefore, again, it renders the entire hive not mukta. But again, we infer from that, if you did not have in mind to eat from the honey on Erev Yom Tov, then what? Then aser. Then the mice would be aser, if that's the case, meaning aser, meaning mukta. Adetani ubilvad shelo yiskabi latzud. If that's the case, then instead of writing before that you shouldn't have kavana to go ahead and, that shouldn't have kavana to trap the item, why don't you instead say, liflog v'lisne bididei? Go ahead and make a distinction within the item itself. B'madram amurim, when is this true? Shechashav aleim. May I well say, when is it true that lamaisa you're allowed to go ahead and cover the hive? That's when what? When you had in mind beforehand to partake of the honey that's in the combs. Because then lamaisa, again, the hive is not mukso, and therefore the act of transporting something to cover the hive is an act of transporting an item to cover a permitted item. But if you did not have in mind to partake of the combs, of the honey in the combs, then what? Then the mice, again, the hive is mukta. And if the hive is mukta, then you're not permitted to go ahead and transport something to go ahead and cover it. To which the Gemara says, this is what it means to say. But what the Gemara means to say is like this, even if you had in mind to partake of the honey in the combs, ubilvad shelo yiskavin lotzud. You still can't have kavana. You still have to be careful that one should not have kavana to go ahead and trap the bees. So kimta. So how do we establish this brisa? Ki Rabbi Yehuda de isle mukta. So I'll say apparently this brisa is reflecting the view of Rabbi Yehuda, who holds of mukta. Because again, we'll say according to Rabbi Shimon, he might hold even without kavana. The hive is not mukta. So this must be Rabbi Yehuda. Amos sefa. But yet, if you look at the end of the brisa, ubilvad shelo yiskavin lotzud. The end of the Brisa says, as long as you don't have kavana to trap the bees, asan the Rabbi Shimon. This reflects the view of Rabbi Shimon. Davreshein meskavin mutar, who holds that what? Rabbi Shimon holds that an act that occurs without kavana, if an act of malacha occurs, but it wasn't your kavana to go ahead and commit that act, then it's permitted. That's Rabbi Shimon. This thing Gemara says, v'tizbra. So what's the first thing Gemara is asking is, the Brisa seems to be reflecting two different views. The first part of the brisa, which indicates that there's a din of mukta over here, is like Rabbi Yehuda. And the second part of the brisa that says, as long as you don't have kavana to trap, then it's not called trapping, seems to be Rabbi Shimon. To which the Gemara says, v'ha abayi v'rava v'tizbra. To Rabbi Shimon, v'ha abayi v'rava d'amri tarvayu, modu Rabbi Shimon p'sik reisha v'lo yamos. But there's a greater kasha, I'll say why. Because even Rabbi Shimon agrees that what's called a p'sik reisha. P'sik reisha is an event that will definitely occur. Even Rabbi Shimon agrees that that is usher, meaning a tarvashim is kavein, means that I'm doing something that may result in a malacha. That's Rabbi Shimon says, that's mutter. But if something is a psik resha, meaning that the act will definitely result in a malacha, then Rabbi Shimon agrees that such an act is asr. And it would appear that the act of covering the hive, by definition, is what? Is a psik resha that you are going to trap the bees. To which the Gemara says, the olam kulu Rabbi Yehudim. In reality, the entire brayso reflects the idea of Rabbi Yehuda. V'hach amaskin, and what are we talking about over here? The isbe kavi, where again, literally, the hive has windows. Or in other words, again, what it means is that when you cover the hive, the bees are not fully trapped. Remember, by the way, just so you understand, when we talk about covering the hive, they don't mean like this image of putting a sheet or something over the hive. They actually mean covering the entrance of the hive. That's what covering the hive means. To which the Gemara ultimately answers, even if you cover the entrance, there are other windows. Apparently, again, even with the windows, bees normally go in and out of the hive only through the entrance. But since there are other technical exits, it's permitted. This thing must be low-tame Rabbi Yehuda. Sorry, this they copy. Low-tame Rabbi Yehuda. And don't assume that according to Rabbi Yehuda means as long as you don't have in mind to do tzeda. Ella ema, rather say, rather, according to Rabbi Yehuda, what Rabbi Yehuda was saying was, you just have to make sure not to make the hive into a trap. Into a trap. So the Gemara says, pshita, but that's obvious. What would I have thought? I'm after Rabbi Yehuda that the malacha of tzeda, the malacha of trapping, only applies to species that are normally trapped. But species that are not normally trapped are not subject to the laws of tzeda. So for example, no one really traps bees. No one traps bees. I'm not talking about now trapping something to remove harm from them. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about nobody hunts bees. Nobody goes after trapping bees. So therefore, again, maybe the Maya said they're not subject to the malacha of tzeda. Kamashmalon, Rabbi Yehuda teaches us, or the Brisa teaches us, is that even animals that are not normally trapped, are still subject to the malacha of tzeda, of trapping. Rav Ashi says, Mikatoni b'mosachama u'b'mosagishamim. So Rav Ashi now goes back. If you look at Rashi, Rav Ashi Amar, li'olam kidishaninan me'ikara. Rav Ashi wants to go back to the first approach. And according to Rav Ashi, the reason ultimately, again, why you can go ahead and cover up, the hive on Shabbos or Yom Tov is why? Because Lamaisa, again, there's honey there. There's honey in the hive itself, Rashi says. Deika dvash lamach adam. So remember, the reason we had to ultimately abandon that approach was because the Gemara said there's only honey in the hive during the summer. There is no honey in the hive during the winter. To which Rav Ashi explains, So Vashi understands that. What is this referring to? This is referring to, again, to the days of Nisan and the days of Tishrei. And I will say, in Tishrei and in Nisan are the two times of year where you could have both still some rain and still some heat. And therefore, again, those are also times where honey is still present in the hive. And according to Ravashi, that's ultimately, again, what the Bryce is referring to. Okay, so the Gemara goes weiter. The Isa, suppose I just want to point out to you, in that fundamental machlokes in Ula and Rabbi Yitzchak, we paskin like Ula. So remember again, Ula holds, Rabbi Yitzchak held, that you could only move a kli for the sake of something that itself is permitted. So for example, in our Mishnah, Rabbi Yitzchak feels that when the Mishnah says that you may cover the fruit with kelim if it's raining, that Rabbi Yitzchak understood that the Mishnah was explicit, that a stafka only something like fruit for which you can move a kli, but something that itself is prohibited, you may not move a kli to service that prohibited item. Ula holds no. Ula says we don't look at the item that is being serviced, but rather what do we look at? We look at the nature of the item that is being moved. If the item that's being moved is permitted, is not mukta, then the fact that it's going to serve something that is mukta is irrelevant to us. And I will say we pass in halacha lemaisa like Ula. So therefore, for our purposes, just to illustrate this, for our purposes, what it would mean is on Yom Tov, if it was raining and your bricks are on top of your roof and they're going to ruin your bricks, you would be permitted to go ahead and take a kli. Now, the kli, it's, of course, itself has to be permitted for moving, has to be permitted to move, can't be mukta, but I could take that kli and I could use it to go ahead and cover my bricks. Okay, so the Gemara goes weiter. V'nosin kli tachas hadlaf b'shabbos. Remember, again, the Mishnah said that you may go ahead and place a utensil underneath the dripping. The dlaf means the water that is dripping down on Shabbos. Tana. So we learned. Im nismali hakli. So we'll say, now here's the interesting case. That's fine that I can now put the kli underneath the drip. But let's say it's a pretty healthy drip. So what happens now when the kli fills up? So the Gemara says, no worries. Im nismali hakli shofech. Shofech b'shona ve'eno nimna. So if the kli fills up, you could keep on emptying it, and you need not stop. You repeat this process, and you need not stop. Look at Rashi. Shofech l'chutz v'shona yachzrena l'mkoma tachas hatlaf ve'eno nimna me'lashanos kol hayom tzarech l'kach. Even if you have to do this the entire day, over and over and over, you are permitted to go ahead and do this. So the Gemara tells him, Ma'isa. The Gemara tells him, Ma'isa. Be'rachya. Beirachia de Abaye Dos. Well, let's listen to this. Abaye's mill house. Abaye's mill house had a significant leak. Look at Rashi. Beirachia de Abaye Dolof. Hadlaf hayo nofel al rechaim. So there was a leak onto his millstones. Vahayu asuyin betit. Vini muchin mitnagishamim. Velo hayo maspik lekelim atzuichim losseis tachas hadlaf. So we'll say it's very interesting. So Abaye has a leak, and the leak is onto his millstones, right? The millstones are the stones that are used for grinding. Those stones, Rashi says, were made from tit, were made really from mud. From mud. So they're hardened mud. What happens if it keeps on dripping on it? It's going to dissolve the mud. So now this could be a significant loss. So what happens? So Abaye comes and also the Kamei de Rabba. He comes before his Rabba, and he says, Amrle, Rabba gave him the following advice. It's actually very interesting. Rabba says, Zil aile lepurech lahasam. Move your bed into the mill house. Move your bed into the mill house. And what's essentially make the mill house your bedroom. And once that happens, do they have kagraf shalrei the afke? So we'll say this is a fascinating idea. So it says, move your bed into the mill house, right? Make the mill house your bedroom. Once you make the mill house your bedroom, Rabosai, having millstones that are all wet and fashmos is disgusting to have in your bedroom. And therefore, that would give you the license to what? That would give you the license to remove it. There's a concept that we've seen before of graf shalrei. Graf shalrei refers to something that is disgusting, that is mos. You are permitted to move that from within your presence on Shabbos and on Yom Tov. That's why, remember, again, that's why can I take the garbage out of my house on Yom Tov? At the end of the day, garbage is really inherently mo. So it's graf shalrei. It's disgusting to leave it around. Why can I clean off my table if there's schmutz? Graf shalrei. So go ahead, make the mill house your bedroom. Once your bed is there, it's disgusting to have the wet millstones there. You can move the wet millstones out. Look at Rashi. Rashi says, Zil aile lepurech lahasam, lebayi shusham de lahavik graf shalrei, shimu usmar echayim lecha, lios lifnei mitascha, va'ata mutra letautalon. You're permitted to move it outside of the mill house. Listen to this. So both sides. So Yosef Abaye, the Kakashle. So Abaye gets, now remember, Rabba was Abaye's Rebbe. So Abaye gets his Eitzah from his Rebbe. What does he say? He begins to think about it. He had a problem. But are you really permitted? So the dispensation for graf shalrei is if something disgusting is there, that you're permitted to remove it. But are you permitted to go ahead and create a situation of graf shalrei? Because again, remember, the millstones by themselves right now, the way they are, it's okay, it's getting room, but it's not graf shalrei. It's only when I move my bed in there does it become graf shalrei. So are you permitted to do that on Shabbos or on Yom Tov? So listen to this. Ad dahachi nafal beirachya. As Abaye was contemplating this, his mill house collapsed. His mill house collapsed. His name about it, his mill house collapsed, everything got ruined. I will say, listen to this. Amar Tesili, I deserve this. The Avri Ademar, because I violated the words of my Rebbe. You know, we'll say, what Abaye was saying was, you know what? My Rebbe gave me Eitzah. My Rebbe gave me Eitzah. And I will say, sometimes, you know, when we get Eitzah from a great person, we get Eitzah from a person who knows what they're talking about. So the truth is, sometimes you just have to go with that Eitzah, recognize that person may just know better than you. And sometimes we make this mistake, or we all make this mistake in life at some point in time, where we get advice from a solid individual. And yet again, we get wrapped up in our own calculations. And by the time we get an opportunity to execute that advice, it's already too late. So Rebbe says, you know what? Abaye says, you know, my Rebbe told me what to do. I didn't listen to him. I started thinking about it. Okay, and here's what happened. Amar Shmuel, I will say again, I want to be clear. Abaye is not saying that this was a punishment from the Ribono Shel Olam for not going ahead and listening to my Rebbe. That's not what he's saying. What he's saying over here is the mill house collapsed because there was a big leak. That's what happened. It collapsed because I didn't take action. The Ribon, I mean, I don't want to say the Ribono Shel Olam has nothing to do with this, but this is not like lightning came and struck the mill house. This was that the leak accelerated. And because I was inactive, because I was passive, because I was too busy, you know, contemplating, essentially what Abaye was saying was, I was thinking that I know better than my Rebbe. I was thinking that I know better than my Rebbe. And when people think that, when a person thinks I know better than my Rebbe, that's when people ultimately get themselves into significant trouble. That, and therefore, again, in the midst of all this contemplation, ultimately the mill house collapses. Amar Shmuel, Graf Shel Rei. I will say another interesting case. Graf Shel Rei va'Ovid Shamayim. Now, I understand also that a Graf Shel Rei, I think I mentioned this before, the technical term Graf Shel Rei refers to a bedpan. So a person has a bedpan, Graf Shel Rei va'Ovid Shamayim Raglayim, or for that matter, again, like a receptacle for urine. What's the halacha? Mutar lahotzion la'ashpa. You're permitted to take them out of your house, let's say to the garbage dump, and dump it out outside of your house. However, ukashu machziro. But when you want to bring it back into the house, what should you do? No sing bo ma'im umachziro. You should put water in it and then bring it back like that. Now, why look at Rashi? No sing bo ma'im umachziro. The muktzin machmas mius hein. The ilav agav ma'ya lo matzilatas lo lo tzio hu deshari le mishum kvodom. So let's listen to this. So what, if I have the bedpan, I'm permitted to take it out of my house. Why? Why? Because it's disgusting. Because it's graf shel rei. But the interesting part is, after I dump it out now, so there's a problem, because how am I permitted to bring it back in? Because now, once I dumped it out, it's just mukta, right? There's no need to get it out of my house. So the Gemara says, how do you bring it back into your house? You put some water in it. Now, what's the shout of the water? Now, obviously, that's not potable water. I'm not going to drink that water. But that water is fit for an animal. So because that water is fit for an animal, I'm now carrying something that is not mukta, and that allows me to go ahead and bring the bedpan back into the house. So one could assume from this that Graf Shel Rei Agav Mayim in Bifnei Atzmolo. So I might have thought that really based on this, maybe you're telling me that the only way I could remove Graf Shel Rei is how? Is if Lemaisa it's contained in a utensil. Because remember, the paradigmatic case of Graf Shel Rei is a bedpan. So obviously I'm not carrying the waste by hand. I'm carrying the waste again in the bedpan. So I might have thought that the only license to remove Graf Shel Rei is only when it's contained in a kli. But if the Graf Shel Rei, I can't touch the Graf Shel Rei itself. To which the one says, not true. I'll tell you why. Tashma, dahu achbarto, the ishtakach be aspar mekid Ravashi. There was once a mouse that died in the spices of Ravashi, in the house of Ravashi. And what did Ravashi say? Amar lehu Ravashi. Ravashi said to his attendant, "Nakta b'tzutzisa v'afkua. Grab it by its tail, take it out by its tail, and throw it out." Which shows you what? That you are even permitted to handle Graf Shel Rei directly, even without a kli intermediate. And I was saying that indeed is how we paskin. That lemaisa, again, you could remove any kind of Graf Shel Rei. You could remove the Graf Shel Rei. You can go ahead and remove it with a kli, but you can even remove the Graf Shel Rei, something disgusting, by actually handling the disgusting item itself. Because it's mukta machmas nius. There's something called something is so disgusting that it's set aside for non-use. The kli itself is disgusting. So therefore, again, you put a little bit of water in it. Therefore, again, it's usable for an animal, technically, and that allows it to be transported back. Says the Mishnah, Kol shechayav nala mishum shavos. I will say, again, now into a very interesting sugya. The Mishnah is going to say, anything, kol shechayav nala mishum shavos, mishum rishus, mishum mitzvah. V'shabes, chayav nala biyom tov. So I will say, anything that literally, that you are not permitted to do, either because it's a shavus, rishus, or mitzvah. So look at Rashi just a moment ago. It's like kol shechayana v'lov midivrei sofrim. Now the Mishnah is going to list a whole variety of things that are usher rabbinically. Now some of them are usher shalol asos b'shabbos mishum shavus or mishum rishus sheyesh bo k'tas mitzvah aval lo mitzvah gidola v'karov lihios davar harishus v'yesh bo is midivrei sofrim or mishum mitzvah shishum mitzvah mamash. So we're going to see that there are three categories of rabbinic prohibitions. There are things that are prohibited they themselves are not permitted, are not mitzvah items. They were just prohibited in order to create a certain atmosphere of rest. There are other things that are prohibited. It's what's called a rishos. They resemble a mitzvah a little bit, but you still can't do it. And there are other things that are even actual mitzvahs that you're not permitted to do on Shabbos and Yom Tov. The Mishnah is going to explain each of these categories. The Eluhein Mishum, the Eluhein Mishum Shavos. Here are things that you can't do because of Shavos. Now, I will say Shavos just means things that the rabbis didn't want you to do in order to maintain an atmosphere of rest on Shabbos and Yom Tov. What can't you do? Lo olin be'ilan, you can't climb a tree, and we'll discuss why all of these things are aser. Lo roch b'nagabi behema, you can't ride an animal. Lo shatin apnei amayim, you're not permitted to swim. This is on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Velo metapchin, you can't clap. Velo mesapkin, mesapkin means you can't hit your hand against your thigh. Velo mirakdin, you can't dance. So those are all things, Rabbi Osai, that are all prohibited in order just to maintain an atmosphere of rest on Shabbos. We'll discuss why. Ve'eloheim mishum rishus. And these are things that are prohibited because of rishus. Rabbi Osai, rishus means they resemble a mitzvah a little bit, but you still can't do it. Lo dunin, you can't adjudicate cases, legal cases. Velo mekachin, you can't get married, you can't do kiddushin. You can't do kiddushin on Shabbos or Yom Tov. Velo choltzin, and you may not go ahead and do chalitza. Velo miyabmin, and you can't do yibum. The eluhei mishum mitzvah, these are the things that are also because of mitzvah. Lo makdishin, you may not go ahead and, I will say, this case means make something hekdish. Lo ma'arichin, you may not make an erech vow. An erech vow, remember, it means when you vow the value of a particular item. Velo macharimim, you can't make a chirim vow, which again we'll see. Ma'arichin just simply means Torah has the concept of erchin vows. Erchin vows mean you can't go ahead and vow a particular amount. I mean, the Torah has specific objective categories, a male between the ages of 20 and this, or a female between, so that's an erech vow. Bchirim vow means donating something to the Beis HaMikdash. Don't get nervous, you can still donate to the shul. Right? That's not what it's not referring to pledges like that. It's talking about very specific types of vows on Yom Tov. You can't separate out Shuma and Meister on Yom Tov as well. All these things were stated on Yom Tov. Kavachomer b'Shabbos. All the more so, it's Asr on Shabbos. Ein bein Yom Tov l'Shabbos. You mean there is no distinction between Shabbos and Yom Tov or Yom Tov and Shabbos. Ella ochal nefesh bilvan. With one exception, that on Yom Tov you're permitted to engage in melacha for the sake of ochal nefesh, which of course is not permitted on Shabbos itself. All right, Rabbi Osai, we'll stop over here. We'll pick up with the Gemara Mirtz Hashem tomorrow morning.
The halachas of the rishus and the mitzvah.